I don't think it was the idea of exporting that was the big issue. It was the issue of the foreign flagged ship.
Alaska oil exports on non-U.S. tankers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska partially lifts the ban for drug felons to receive food stamps.
You know, people can go kill people, rape kids, and eat, have a few drugs on you. You have to go hungry? It's ridiculous.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
A bill that puts local school boards in charge of sex education will become law. Governor Bill Walker decided against vetoing it today. House Bill 156 requires school boards approve any sex education curriculum and anyone who teaches the topic and isn't employed under a contract with schools. Parents now have the right to review sex education curriculum and teachers' credentials. The bill also allows parents to opt their children out of any lesson. Additionally, it bars the state from requiring school districts to administer standardized tests for 2 years unless the federal government threatens to withhold money. A foreign-owned tanker is expected to transport North Slope crude to Asia in the coming weeks. BP has shipped its oil overseas before, but it's been decades since it was on a tanker built and managed outside the U.S. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more on how a change in Congress made this possible.
Joyce Lofgren, a state petroleum economist, says news about an oil tanker named Tyan Long Spirit has caused some confusion. She's received emails from people wondering what all the fuss is about. They thought Alaska was already able to export crude.
I don't think it was the idea of exporting that was the big issue. It was the issue of a foreign flagged ship.
Alaska was already exempt from laws that kept other American oil producers from selling overseas. But last year, Congress dropped those restrictions. Now those companies can sell to foreign refineries, and Alaska producers can transport crude on foreign tankers. That's what BP is doing. Tyan Long Spirit will haul North Slope crude to Asia, and a Bahamas flag is flying from the tanker. Lofgren says before, if BP wanted to transport crude overseas, it had to use an American-made vessel, staffed with U.S. labor.
So it's more expensive, say, than a foreign flag tanker from the Bahamas.
BP confirmed its crude is being transported on Tyan Long Spirit, headed for an Asian refinery. The company says its own tanker is in dry dock, which is the primary motivation for using the foreign flag vessel. Lofgren says typically, North Slope crude heads to the West Coast.
There were some special things happening about that time, and one of them was the maintenance on the North Slope. So there were some maintenance issues and some refining issues that made a little more crude available on the market.
In the past 5 years, Lofgren says North Slope producers have been selling off their West Coast oil refineries. But she doesn't think more Alaska crude will make its way overseas.
You know, I don't imagine we're going to see, you know, just my personal feeling, a lot of this, because it's, first of all, Alaska production is so significantly less than it used to be.
From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Department of Natural Resources in a release say a campfire was the cause of the McHugh fire that started in Chugach State Park near South Anchorage on July 16th. According to a statement sent out this afternoon, the fire began in an area not commonly used by hikers and not in an established campfire ring. The fire was most recently sized at 778 acres, down from a peak of 842 last week. The fire has been worked on over the last 2 weeks by not only firefighters from Alaska, but also crews flown up from the lower 48. The fire is still burning, but not spreading, and is considered contained. National research shows that for every $5 given out in food stamps, $9 is added to the economy. In Alaska, the pool of people eligible for those benefits just got larger. Now, people with drug felonies can apply for food stamps. The state partially opted out of the federal ban with the signing of SB 91, the Criminal Justice Reform Bill. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman has more.
61-year-old Ivory Mack stands in a small office at Bean's Cafe, handing out vitamins and socks through a half-open door.
Your uncle, what about your uncle? He needs a pair too?
Yeah.
Take two pair.
She used to be on the other side of that door. Mack says she spent about 6 years hanging out at Bean's in the Brother Francis shelter. She was fighting a nearly four-decade-long drug addiction.
Started as a kid taking, speed, you know. Nobody wants to be fat, you know. So I was on that, you know, body image. I was anorexic. I went through it all.
Mack says eventually she started using harder drugs because she wanted to fit in. Everyone was doing it. Then, about 20 years ago...
I got busted. Police busted me, okay, for having drugs on me. And I went to jail, did my little time, came out. And guess what? I couldn't eat because they wouldn't give me food stamps because I was a drug-related felon.
She says she was homeless, vulnerable, and didn't have anywhere to turn. And she was angry.
You know, people can go kill people, rape kids, and eat... have a few drugs on you, and you have to go hungry? It's ridiculous.
The ban was part of President Bill Clinton's war on drugs and quickly passed Congress. Anyone convicted of a state or federal drug felony after August 22nd, 1996, would have a lifetime ban on receiving supplemental food assistance unless their state opted out. Now, that ban has been partially lifted in Alaska. People with drug felonies can apply for the program, but they have to prove that they're complying with parole requirements and substance abuse treatment plans. Kara Durr with Food Bank of Alaska says that's sometimes easier said than done.
You know, if this is something that's happened 10, 15 years ago, it's not going to be as easy to prove as for somebody that, you know, has just been released or maybe somebody that had a drug felony out of state.
Durr says the food bank will work with individuals to help them provide the necessary proof because food assistance can help people become more stable.
People that are coming out of incarceration are often some of the most vulnerable people. They're just trying to get back on their feet. And if we're withholding food assistance from them, it's not helping them to really do that.
According to the Marshall Project, only four states still have complete bans in place: Wyoming, Mississippi, South Carolina, and West Virginia. Georgia partially lifted their ban earlier this year. For Ivory Mack, it's too late for the change to really help her. She says she would only receive about $20 a month, and with adverse health conditions, it would be hard for her to get to the public assistance office and complete the interview to apply. So she gets by on her modest income and a couple of meals from Beans while she's down there working. She says it feels good to be giving back to the place that helped her make it through.
I like it because I get to see people, and I feel like I'm a good example for them. If I could do it, anybody could do it.
Max says she's been clean for 3 years now, and she's hoping access to food stamps can help some of her friends get clean, too. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Pavlov Volcano shows off for the cameras.
We saw pretty vigorous degassing of steam in our web camera images, and we got some detections of volcanic ash in satellite views.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The search continues for a man who walked away from the village of Tulaksak 15 days ago. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
On Monday, Tulik Sac Search and Rescue spotted Walter Hawk, a 43-year-old man troopers describe as a, quote, vulnerable adult. A group had boated 9 miles up the Tulik Sac River when they spied Hawk a couple miles offshore through binoculars. Night was approaching, and the missing man was too far away for the group to reach before dark. Search and rescue member Jacob Napoka says the group decided to camp out for the night rather than shout to Hawk and scare him away.
These old people tell us not to holler at him, but quietly walk to him.
But when morning came, Hawk had disappeared. Napoka says this isn't the first time Hawk has vanished.
He's like that. He always tried to go anchorage by walking.
This is the longest Hawk's been missing. Before, search and rescue would always find the wandering man within 3 days. This time, he's been gone more than 2 weeks. Napoka says when Hawk disappears, he doesn't take anything with him.
No, he don't bring nothing. No gun, no knife.
No food, no tent. Before Hawk went missing, he told a friend he was leaving to pick berries, but didn't say where he was going. Napoka says the berries are what's keeping Hawk alive.
Yeah, he's okay because there's lots of berries up there. Lots of blueberries, blackberries.
A few miles from where search and rescue spotted Hawk, they found an old blanket and sleeping bag under some trees. They think Hawk pulled the linens from a nearby abandoned house and had been using them. The search team tied food and coffee in the branches, hoping Hawk would return to that spot.
Dry fish, we make 1 gallon juice and hang them up, bread, cookies, all that stuff.
So far, the food hasn't been touched. Napoka says searchers have been leaving every day after work to look for Hawk. Bethel Search and Rescue and Alaska State Troopers have also been helping, and berry pickers have been told to keep an eye out. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Women and Alaska Natives are underrepresented in the STEM fields, but two South Peninsula girls are breaking barriers before even leaving high school. They are learning about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics at University of Alaska Anchorage this summer. The girls are participating in the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, 5-week acceleration academy. KBBI's Daisha Eaton has more.
Nicolaivis School sophomore Chelsea Johnson says ANSEP's Acceleration Academy isn't only fun. It helps her get ahead.
I think that it's great that I'm able to get college credit as a sophomore.
The 15-year-old is participating in ANSEP's Acceleration Academy with about 60 other students from around the state. Johnson says the program allows her to explore subjects not available at her school.
Honestly, it is one of the best opportunities I can see for myself. At Nicolaivis, there really aren't very many students looking to even go to college. So a program like this really helps me open my eyes. I was introduced to it from my principal, and he thought it would be a great idea for me because I was really interested in math and the STEM field.
She says the hands-on, collaborative learning approach brings subjects to life. Johnson got interested in STEM subjects as a seventh grader when she participated in one of ANSEP's middle school academies. Now she's hoping to narrow her interests.
That's what I'm hoping ANSEP can do for me, help me figure out what I want to go into exactly. I probably will want to become some type of engineer and definitely in the STEM field.
ANSEP Regional Director Michael Ulrone says the Acceleration Academy sets students on the path towards STEM careers, since they take classes for both high school and university credit. ANSEP started in 1995 as a scholarship program for university students and has evolved into much more, with programs for students starting at sixth grade and continuing on through high school, undergraduate, and graduate degree programs up to the doctorate level. Ulrone Chupik, originally from Chivac, a small community in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta of southwest Alaska, is an alumni of the program. He studied civil engineering and now works for ANSEP while simultaneously pursuing a master's degree in engineering management. One of the most important aspects of the program, he says, are the STEM labs, where students work in groups and engage in hands-on activities focused on real-life challenges that professionals might find in the field.
So, for example, students will be participating in a water treatment STEM lab where students will learn the chemistry and the engineering about how water systems treat and filtrate water for our rural villages in Alaska.
The activities are designed around teamwork, says Ulrone, and geared toward building positive connections between students from across the state. ANSEP's objective is to affect systemic change in the hiring patterns of Alaska Natives in science and engineering by placing students on a career path to leadership. Johnson, the sophomore from Nikolaevsk, is Alaska Native, Yupik, but ANSEP is open to all students, including Homer High School senior Aaron Gillum. The 16-year-old has been participating in ANSEP programs since middle school and says she keeps coming back because she can't get the classes she needs to pursue the college studies she's interested in. So far this year, Gillum has completed a motor car lab, a chemistry lab where she made soap, and she's currently working on a geology lab focused on solving coastal erosion problems in Alaska. She says the program has made her sure that she wants a career in a STEM field.
I'm either interested in going into biomedical engineering or becoming an educator and doing work similar to what people at ANSEP do.
Besides getting to take classes that wouldn't be available at Homer High, Gillum says she enjoys connecting with other students.
One of the other things I really like about ANSEP is the community aspect of it. It's really amazing to get to come up here and be surrounded by a bunch of other kids who have similar interest to me, because in Homer, although there are kids interested in STEM and stuff, sometimes it's hard to find kids who you connect with in the same kind of way in terms of interest.
Johnson and Gillum are in their third week of the Acceleration Academy. In Homer, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Scientists have increased the alert level for Pavlov Volcano for the second time this month. Today, the Alaska Peninsula volcano showed signs of low-level eruptive activity, prompting officials to raise its alert level from advisory to watch. Dave Schneider is a geophysicist with the U.S. Geological Survey at the Alaska Volcano Observatory.
We saw pretty vigorous degassing of steam in our web camera images, and we got some detections of volcanic ash in satellite views.
But that doesn't necessarily mean there will be an eruption, Snyder says. Pavlov's current activity is quite a bit lower than in March when the volcano erupted, spewing ash 37,000 feet into the atmosphere and causing dozens of flights to be canceled. He also says thermal signals have not indicated that new lava is rising to the surface. But thanks to its ongoing seismic activity, Snyder says, scientists are monitoring Pavlov closely.
This is a very slippery volcano. It can go from sort of low-level activity and ramp up without a lot of precursor activity.
For now, scientists will keep an eye on Pavlov's temperature and ash emissions by satellite and webcam. Dinosaur bones have been found in Denali National Park. The bone fragments were discovered this summer by a team of University of Alaska Fairbanks and National Park Service scientists. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the researchers found the bones on a mountain slope in the Cantwell Rock Formation north of the park road.
Dinosaur tracks have previously been found in similar rock in Denali National Park, and UA Museum of the North Earth Sciences curator Pat Druckenmiller says the bones are an exciting development.
Because tracks can give you a certain type of information, but bones can add a lot more to that story.
Druckenmiller says the bone fragments are likely from a duck-billed dinosaur, which were common in Alaska 70 million years ago, noting that one of the bones provides more specific insight.
It's called an ossified tendon, and it's really distinctive for the group. So we can probably say with some certainty that we know at least more specifically what one kind of animal was that was making tracks there.
Druckenmiller says the bones may be from a species he and colleagues earlier discovered fossils of along the Colville River on the North Slope. Druckenmiller says the Denali dinosaur bones are less than 2 inches in length, but stand out to team members' trained eyes in the rocky terrain.
Because they tend to weather a lighter color, often a bluish color, and it has a very distinctive texture, just like modern bone.
Druckenmiller is optimistic more bones will be discovered in the area of this summer's find.
We found these bones actually on our first day out. So I think that bodes well for future discoveries.
The Denali research team will continue to explore the area in future summers as part of the collaboration, which also includes Florida State University professor Greg Erickson. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Researchers think they've found a new species of whale in western Alaska. A new study published in Marine Mammal Science is identifying the find as a relative of the Baird's beak whale. KDLG's Shaylin Cochran has more.
It doesn't have a name yet. Researchers aren't quite that far along in the process of actually cataloging a new species, but it isn't a brand new creature either. Philip Morin is a molecular geneticist with NOAA. His work on that genetic level was a key in making the discovery.
This species, the new beaked whale, has probably been around for at least several million years.
This new type has actually been identified before, just incorrectly. Over the years, carcasses and skeletons have simply been pegged as juvenile or dwarf Baird's beaked whales, though they are noticeably darker in color. But a closer look at the genes led Morin and the rest of the team to conclude they were really looking at something altogether different.
We looked at Baird's beaked whale samples from all across the North Pacific. And the amount of difference, even between animals found in Japan versus northern Mexico, was very small. When you compare that to the difference between the animals that we identified as this new species, it was about an order of magnitude higher. They're much more different from each other than animals within each species.
Warren's work was important because typically a new species is identified through a lot of taxonomy work. Lots of physical samples are brought in and studied, the differences noted, and eventually we get a new species. But specimens of this type are rare. It took a lot of detective work to find what is out there. Dr. Paul Wade is a research biologist for NOAA's Marine Mammal Laboratory. He spent years canvassing the Bering Sea for whales, and he contributed to the pool of samples used for that genetic testing. He says this latest discovery opens the door for a lot more questions, the first of which is where exactly these small black-beaked whales live.
Kind of from Dutch Harbor to the west and north of the Aleutian Island chain is a deep water basin in the Bering Sea. Everything going over towards where you guys are in Dillingham is shallow water on the Bering Sea shelf, and that's not where you would find these whales. But once you get past the Pribilof Islands, the shelf edge breaks off there and goes into deep water. And so maybe this is a whale that's primarily found in that deep ocean basin in the Bering Sea there.
Research on this project actually started a couple of years ago when one of the whales washed up on shore at St. George in the Pribilofs back in June of 2014. In Dillingham, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Passengers on a Juno tour vessel had a hands-on nature experience yesterday when they rescued a drowning deer. Audrey Benson is a naturalist with Gastineau Guiding Company. She says they heard over the radio about two deer swimming and motored over to see them. When they arrived, only one was above water and it was struggling. After a larger tour boat tried to rescue the animal a few times, it gave up, but Benson, along with the passengers and crew, decided to keep trying. They were eventually able to lasso the deer and pull it onto the boat.
The deer was immediately really bewildered and disoriented, and it was shaking a lot. It was shivering, its teeth were chattering, it tried to stand up, but it collapsed because it was so weak.
The crew was able to drop the deer off at Shelter Island. The animal's companion disappeared before the group reached it and is presumed to have drowned. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says it's very uncommon for deer to drown. They regularly swim from island to island. Heavy rains in the lower Koyukuk and middle Yukon valleys have prompted the National Weather Service to issue a flood watch beginning tomorrow, extending through Saturday evening. 1 to 2 inches of rain are in the forecast, with the possibility of more in some areas beginning early tomorrow morning. The Weather Service says rapid rises will occur on smaller streams and rivers draining into the Nulato Hills, followed by significant rises in larger area rivers. Flooding is expected in low-lying areas, potentially affecting the communities of Galena, Nulato, Huslia, Keltag, Ruby, and Koyukuk. It's been unusually wet across a large section of the state this summer. Brian Brettsnyder is a climatologist in Anchorage who closely tracks Alaska climate data and trends. Alaska's Energy Desk is checking in with him regularly as part of a new segment, Ask a Climatologist. Brettsnyder told Energy Desk editor Annie Feit that some parts of the state, especially near Fairbanks, have had double their normal rainfall since June. That has been good for tamping down wildfires, but it has its own ties to a warmer world.
Why has it been so wet?
Well, there's been a couple of reasons. First and foremost, the ocean temperatures around Alaska have been quite warm, near record warm, and those warm waters provide a nearly endless supply of moisture, much more moisture than is typical for the summer. And so when we've been having rain showers, all that additional moisture is like fuel for these storms, and it turns a light to moderate storm into a moderate to heavy rain event.
And at least in South Central Alaska, you know, we're in Anchorage, we haven't thought of this as a rainy summer until at least the last 4 days or something. What accounts for that?
Well, sometimes, you know, the perception can be a little bit different than the reality. So we had here in Anchorage, we had a big rain event the first week of June, over an inch in one day. But even if you back that out, it's been an above normal rainfall summer. So it's not just the last few days. It's not just that one storm. There's been a number of events that have contributed a quarter inch, a third of an inch, even a half an inch of rain. And those all add up.
What about Southeast Alaska? Are they in the same boat?
Well, the switch has been flipped a little bit from the first half of the year, where the southern Alaska coast and southeast was quite wet from January through May. But this summer so far, they are from Juneau and Ketchikan to Yakutat, Kodiak, they're all below normal for precipitation. So it's been a little bit of a turning of the tables.
Brian Brettsnyder is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. Do you have a climate question for Brian? Email akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Elizabeth Jenkins, and Lakeed Rashavis in Juneau, Ann Hillman, Josh Edge, and Annie Feit in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Daisha Eaton in Homer, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shaylin Cochran in Dillingham, and Laura Craigle in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
Apollo MT by Guardian Flight, medevac memberships that protect you or a family member when there is a need for air medical transportation. Information available at apollomt.com.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.